Hey, what's up? It's another week. That means another Touch Arcade bonus show. Brad Nicholson, of course. I'm joined by two bros this week. Eli Hodapp, of course. What's up, Eli?
What's up, dude bro?
Not much, dude bro. Also joined by Jared, the bearded one, Nelson. Yeah.
What's up, Thug Life?
Oh, not much.
Thug Life, Brad Nicholson.
Just chilling.
Lifting weights.
Yeah.
Lifting weights, chilling with bros, drinking natty ice.
That natty ice. Oh, God. There's one thing I'll never do to myself, guys. Let's drink beer. Empty calories.
Really?
Empty calories.
You're such a wiener.
Did you know that Jared looks just like the Keystone Light Keith Stone?
No doubt.
I've heard that.
I should Google it.
Keystone Light is not very good either, in case you were wondering.
Nah, man. That's just about
so if you're light. If you're ever finding yourself in a situation where you're standing at the beer cooler and you're like, huh, Jared's pretty cool, and he looks like Keith Stone, so I bet Keystone Light is pretty good. That is the incorrect
line.
Don't
do it.
Do not do it.
You were on a Stones kick for a while, though. You gotta admit.
I tried to get a little intoxicated on Stones once, and it just didn't happen.
You need to drink like a 30-pack.
Yeah, it just didn't happen. I woke up the next day like the most hungover I've ever been in my entire life. Which I don't even know how that makes sense.
Cheap beer will do to you. Cheap beer is, that's how they do it, man. There's too much sugars in that shit.
You hear that, Brad?
That sounds gross.
Oh, Brad, another thing I had lately. You remember those Kool-Aid blasters in the plastic, little bottles?
Yeah.
They look like a soda bottle, right? And you twist the top off.
Yeah, I double-fisted two of those, and I was just like, fuck yeah, Brad Nicholson. I think on those, the ingredients list high fructose corn syrup before water.
Oh, God. I would sit there, like, immediately, if that even had touched my lips, I'd go to the gym. I freak out.
Well, I always drank Squeezits. They weren't Kool-Aid. They were Squeezits. Do you remember those?
Yeah, oh, I do.
So your mom shopped at Aldi.
when I was younger I used to eat nothing but those zebra cakes, man, when I was a kid. Remember zebra cakes?
Of course.
Little Debbie was a motherfucker. I used to also eat Nutty Bars. That's about as bad as I got.
I revisited Nutty Bars as an adult, and like they're like 95% air.
Are they?
Totally underwhelming.
I still got a hankering for M&Ms from time to time, though. I miss those. Oh,
so
hey.
Snacks and beer.
I almost forgot. Well, we're doing an interview. This isn't a bonus podcast where we just shoot the shit, although we've done a pretty great job at that so far. We're actually going to be interviewing Semi-Secret Software's Adam Saltzman. He's probably best known as the lead dude on Cannonball. That's kind of a big deal. And, well, hell, guys, we already spent plenty of time talking about beer and snacks. Let's jump right into it.
And get some beer and snacks?
Yeah, you can do it right now during this musical interlude. Hey, welcome back. In case you forgot, you're listening to Touch Arcade Show Bonus Edition. Here, of course, with Adam Saltzman, creator of Cannonbolt. What's up, bro?
Hey, how you doing?
Pretty good. I'm just stumbling through stuff, you know, just doing my thing, trying to be host. The boys tell me that we're getting a new one eventually, so, you know, I'm
kind of... get hit by a car first.
Yeah, warming the seat, looking for good cars to get hit by. I'm looking for a good one cruising about 5 in a Walmart parking lot. I'd rather an old lady take me out than anyone else. Just personal preference.
Seems to be a good way to go.
Yeah, and that's a hell of a lawsuit, too, because God knows, the bitch probably has glaucoma or something, right?
Wow.
That's sewer.
Yeah, probably.
Explicit podcast, I'm allowed to do it. Adam, this should be all about you, bro. Let's talk about, I don't know, what'd you have for lunch?
I had a homemade sandwich with Boar's Head Everroast chicken. a scratch-made sourdough loaf, and a slice of Gouda, and a little bit of organic brown mustard.
My goodness.
That was incredibly detailed.
That was amazing.
It was a pretty good sandwich.
Any other person on the planet would have been like, I had a sandwich.
Yeah.
So Adam is responsible for like an awful lot of cool shit. Obviously, Cannibalt is probably, would you say that's probably your most well-known game in the iOS world?
Yeah, that's like my, I don't know, business card game or whatever.
Yeah.
I say, hey, I'm Adam Cannibalt, and you know, they're like, oh, cool.
Yeah, and you also got Gravity Hook HD, which came out after Cannibalt, but before that you had Wordle. Am I missing anything else on the App Store? Steambirds, but I don't.
Yeah,
I'm not.
Steambird support.
What was you guys' involvement in that? Because that was kind of.
We did the iOS version, so it was in Flash for about a year before our port came out. But I did some new artwork for it, and we worked directly with Andy and Daniel to put it out on iOS. It was cool.
You've also you're directly responsible for the Flixel engine, or are you just a developer that works on it?
I am responsible for the Flash version of it, and the iOS version that's out there was ported by Eric, my sort of other half here at Semi Secret.
Oh, cool! Yeah, we just had the guys from the Blocks Cometh on last week that used it for their game. So,
oh, awesome! It was in it's in Connect Road too.
Yeah, what other big name games are there out there that are using it on the App Store that you know of?
I don't know of many actually. The version that we of the engine that we put out for iPhone is really, it's not all of Flixel. It's all the parts of Flixel that we needed for our ports. So it's not crippled exactly, but it's kind of missing a few bits and pieces. So the fact that it's been actually useful for people is awesome. It's definitely makes us feel good.
But it's big in the Flash universe, right?
I think it's bigger there. I'd say quite a few. I think there's a few hundred Flash games probably, and there have been IGF nominees and Adult Swim games and all kinds of good stuff.
And you can just use it, right? Is there like licensing, or do you have to pay for it or anything?
No, it's totally free. It's under something called the MIT license, which is essentially all that's in an MIT license is like a disclaimer saying that you can't sue me because you downloaded it. Otherwise, do whatever you want. Just go nuts.
Why did you choose that license over the do whatever the fuck you feel like license, or did that not exist at the...
I think the same thing. The MIT license was just around for longer and is slightly less hostile appearing anyway. It's that in spirit, certainly.
Going with something that has a cover your own ass clause is always a good idea too, as opposed to just anything goes.
Yeah. But the main thing is I didn't want it to have strict licensing because I wanted people to actually use it. And I think that the second you part of it is just lowering the bar, period. I think as soon as you package something up and sell it and, put a really strict license on it that stops people from, using it to, kind of try and make a little money for themselves, that suddenly people would expect me to do documentation or to actually support it or, a lot of stuff that I'm just not interested in doing.
Yeah,
it sounds reasonable.
This is like the light, easy way of doing things. All the source code is up there. If you want to steal a bunch of it to do whatever you want with, great. That's what it's there for. And people are still awesome about it. They help with documentation. They help find bugs. They help suggest new features that end up being a really big deal down the line. It's really cool.
And do you spend much time maintaining it and coming out with new versions and stuff? Or is it just out there as is now, and that's how it's been?
It's gotten a couple of major updates. It's been out for a few years, and about probably once a year, it gets a big overhaul. Because things just pile up after a while. Like you put it out there, you let people make games with it for a year, you gather feedback for a year, you use it yourself to make games for a year, and pretty soon there's just a big stack of stuff that you did really wrong that just needs to be fixed. So I've gone through that loop a couple of times, and I'm pretty happy so far with where it's at. There's things that I'd love to put in, but It's usually like, you know, I only get to do heavy lifting on it once or twice a year, probably.
So I guess you want to talk about your games. Let's talk about Wordle, which I guess was your very first foray into iOS development. I mean, why did you choose a word game for that?
It was very much an accident for me, at least. So
I mean, I guess to give some perspective, I mean, Wordle came out, what, like maybe a month after the App Store launched? Or was it more than that?
It was a couple of months. I'd say we were 6 months, but we were still, I think it was still in what I would consider like sort of version one of the App Store. So like, you know.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I remember downloading Wordle, which, you know, for reference is kind of like a game that's a little similar to PopCap's Bookworm, I guess.
Sure.
And,
sure.
You know, it was like there was nothing like it on the App Store, which is just kind of crazy to think when you consider that on the App Store today, there's basically probably 25 clones of every single game that's like worth playing.
Yeah. It was there were a lot even, you know, back then compared to consoles, there were still a lot of apps, but it was, you know, orders of magnitude fewer than there is today. But so I had been rock climbing with friends since shortly after we moved here to Austin. And one of the guys that I rock climb with is this guy, Eric Johnson, who is sort of a computer genius. And he'd been a Mac developer for like a decade before that was a cool thing to be. So when the iPod came out and the App Store was up and they had the SDK out for free or close to free, I think $100 or whatever to sign up.
Yeah, $100 is basically free compared to like console development and everything.
Yeah, totally. So he was still a student. He was a PhD student at University of Texas in the computer engineering department, I think. He was just working on it on the side. He thought it'd be cool to make something to run on a little iPod because why not? It's cheap, it's fun. So he worked on it probably on and off on the weekends for like 6 months and then approached me while we were rock climbing and said, "Hey, do you want to check out this thing I've been building and see if you want to do art for it?"
That sounds
and
like a terrible place to do that at.
Right? Yeah. We weren't actually dangling off of the cliff at the time.
Oh, okay, good, good.
he like swung by the house and was like, "Hey, check out this thing I've been working on." And I mean, like you said, it was like way ahead of everything that was on the App Store at the time. There were other word games on the App Store that were just coming out finally, but they were like tap each letter in order kind of a thing. So it sounds silly, but at the time it was like a really big deal that our game was actually easy to play. You could just trace your finger over the letters and there was a word. But that actually didn't exist on the App Store at the time. It was like very Wild Westy.
Yeah, it's crazy to think that like just how far that, you know, we've gone. I mean, like really the hardware that you guys built that game for is like still in use today by, you know, like people that are holdouts on upgrades and, you know, stuff like that. But yeah, it's just crazy to think like how far everything's gone.
Yeah, I didn't have an iPhone when we did it. I didn't have an iPhone for like 6 or 8 months after that game came out, which sounds crazy, but I did the art for it in like a day and sent it off, and that was that. But yeah, I don't know. It was a really cool thing. It did really well. People really responded well to it, and it let us fiddle around for a year. We worked on a racing game, which was a terrible idea.
Yeah, I saw that at GDC Austin. I mean, do you want to talk about that at all? Or
I wouldn't mind talking about it. It's something that's just not going to exist, I think. Or if it does, it'll be rebuilt from the ground up, probably.
It's kind of like one of those off-road, like top-down arcade-y kind of games. I thought it looked really cool. I mean, why did you guys cancel it?
We just weren't. It wasn't any fun to work on. After a while, there were a bunch of parts of it were really fun to work on because it had cool stuff in it. You could edit the track in real time if you wanted, which was not a useful thing for a racing game to have, but it was kind of cool because it would dynamically redraw all the graphics and it would dynamically reconfigure all the artificial intelligence waypoints for tracking who's in first and who's in second. So all those were really fun problems to solve. But and we had a really weird, I don't know if you remember the steering.
I wasn't going to like get into details because I still haven't seen anyone using something like that. So if you wanted to use it later,
maybe I'll Maybe I'll keep it secret.
It was a really cool, very interesting control method that worked very well, I thought.
Yeah. So we kind of like solved all those problems, and it was like, okay, great. Now let's design 100 racetracks and make 10 more cars and work out all the bugs for it. And I don't know. I got really, really tired of working on it. And on the side, I started working on Cannibal.
Cannibal then, was that originally targeted to be a Flash game, or did you have the iPhone in mind when you built all that?
It was very much meant to be a Flash game, but it was kind of one of those things where the idea started to come out about it, and the idea was it'll be a tappy one-touch type of game, because that was the theme was minimalism, and I'd been doing mobile art as a freelancer like a year before, and one-click games like Tower Blocks, I think, is one of the better well-known like early one-button games. Tower Blocks, I think that's what it's called.
The game where you like drop stuff from a frame? Yeah.
Like floors of a building, you just tap and it falls down. And because that was a big deal, because mobile phones used to be so awful that if the game required any more complex input than a single button press, then you're out of luck.
No way
to feel good. So I was doing that, and it was like, well, how can I make sure that, or how could I make this an easy fit for iPhone? If I'm going to be doing a minimalist game on the side anyway, because it'll probably be a simple game. It'd be easy to put on there. So I just kind of made it the right width. That was it. There was no the idea wasn't like, this is going to be an awesome iPhone game. It was very much, this will be an awesome Flash game. But just in case, like, it wouldn't be horrible on iPhone, probably, as long as I don't make it too giant in one, you know, dimension or the other.
That's cool. I mean, like, I would say that Cannibal is high up there with probably the games that I've played the absolute most on my phone. Like, right up there with, you know, stuff like Doodle Jump and Angry Birds, even, you know.
Like, that's awesome.
I wish, and I don't wish, that there was a, like, timer in the game to see, like, just how many hours you've been, like, you know.
Because I probably don't want to know.
Insane. Yeah.
There's pros and cons to having that information at hand.
But I mean, is Cannibal your guys' most successful game, you would say?
By unit sales, I think Wordle is still more popular. By revenue, I think Cannibal has earned more. But Cannibal's $3, Wordle's $2. And I think Wordle's actually still sold more copies.
So at what point did Gravity Hook HD come in then? And, like, you know, similarly, was that, you know, where was the iPhone in the original development of that game?
Not even in the picture. That was made, it was actually made at the same time as the original Wordle art. I made the original Gravity Hook for Flash way, you know, 2.5-3 years ago. It was made in the exact same month that Eric approached me to do art for Wordle. And like I said, at the time, I had no plans for iPhone anything. That was all Eric's idea. We did that, and after Cannibal came out, it was sort of like, wow, that was a really easy way to make like a giant pile of money, is just put a Flash game on the iPhone. So let's just do that again. And it really was not the same experience. In a lot of different ways.
I always thought that the problem with Gravity Hook HD was, I mean, I enjoy playing the game, but it's got too steep of a learning curve.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas
no,
Cannibal, you can hand someone the phone and be like, tap to jump. And they're like, oh,
yeah, no, I think it shows, like, there was a year of game design and prototypes and reading and learning and research in between when I made Gravity Hook for Flash and when I made Cannibal for Flash. And I just think it shows. I think, you know, anytime anybody's doing something and they're a year farther along, you know, in their passion, you can tell the difference between the work. And I think that kind of cripples Gravity Hook no matter what. I tried to kind of find around that, but...
Because, I mean, Gravity Hook has, you know, a simple control mechanic, but, I mean, at least, like, on Cannibal, it always seemed to be like, even if you hand your phone to someone that's, like, terrible at the game and they fall after, like, three buildings, it's still really cool to have, you know, like, the whole jumping out the original window and, like, you know, rolling across the second building and
that
stuff, as opposed to just, like, sending out your old grappling hook and exploding.
yeah, and the whole thing, Gravity Hook was not was nothing about Gravity Hook is about exuberance or like wish fulfillment or human flight or any of these sort of awesome things. Like Gravity Hook's very much about being stuck in a hole full of bombs. And
that's the way I like it.
Yeah, it's just not, it's not a happy place to be.
But like another thing that I thought was really cool about Cannibal, and it might have been one of the first games on the App Store that did this, was you managed to create like this whole universe around this extremely simple game just through the use of music and what was going on in the background. I mean, like at what point in the development of Cannibal did you guys decide, hey, let's make like an alien invasion happening in the background?
It was like a fairly snap decision thing, like because what I had sort of gotten the game at the point when I started trying to figure out what would be in the game was very, very stripped down. It was like there was a white box and that was sort of the guy and you could control it. And then there were green boxes, big green boxes, and those were the rooftops. And there were windows. So I'd gotten as far in my head as you're a guy and you're jumping on rooftops because that's really cool. And because I've been bad-mouthing Mirror's Edge for like 6 months or something, and I kind of thought, like maybe as a game designer, maybe I should put my sort of money where my mouth is on this. And like I think I could make a cool game about flow and parkour in a psychological sense. So maybe I should try to do that instead of just being like, I don't like how Mirror's Edge did it.
Your game needed more bounce, just like Mirror's Edge did.
Yeah, yeah. So like I started doing a sketch of a guy jumping and glass flying through the air, and there were some rooftops, and there was a silhouette city in the background because silhouette cities just look cool. But then that was sort of it. And I had sort of a this big idea at the time that that this is something that games just should do, is if you have empty background space, don't just have clouds there or buildings there. Like it's not doing anything otherwise. Like have it tell a little bit of a story. 'Cause old Nintendo games would do this all the time because they didn't have, you know, space to do otherwise. So, you know, the first level you'd run past scenes in the background that would kind of tell the story of what's happening. And one of my favorite 2D games is this game Rocket Knight Adventures. It was like an old Sega Genesis game.
Right. Oh yeah, yeah, I remember that.
Mm-hmm.
And they just re-released that, I think, on Xbox Live Arcade.
There was like a reboot of it like a year ago, which was an abomination. But the original game itself has this great thing where you start out and you're one or two screens into the first level, and they've actually done a cutscene before this, but you see this like castle on fire in the background with this giant spider robot clinging to the top of it. And it's this really cool sort of foreshadowing storytelling moment in just sitting there in the background that you can optionally take in, you know, or you can notice the second or third time you're playing the level. And I really like that thing. Like if you're making a game that's about replay, you know, why not have initially hard to notice details that will pop out to people on the fifth time they play, or the 10th time they play, or the 20th time they play. That's always a cool feeling when I'm playing a game to be, you know, playing through and go, oh, whoa, I just noticed that, you know, X, Y, or Z.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah, I like that too.
The huge spaceship, as you you need to be, what, like 5,000 or something like that for it to show up? I don't remember, but...
yeah, something like that. I think it's 3,000 for the spaceship, maybe, for it to start appearing slowly.
Yeah, it's just, like, such a cool, like, realization when you get to the point where there's, like, oh, my God, you know, not only is there, like, crap falling down from the sky, but there's a massive alien mothership. And I think that, like, the first time I noticed it, it actually caused me to die because I was just like, oh, this is so cool. So, I mean,
There's a funny thing there. Like, if when you're making a game that's about these, about reflexes and about jumping at the last moment and that kind of thing, every time you put in something that could potentially be distracting, you're actually affecting the way the game is played, even if it's not technically an obstacle you have to jump over. If it's something that pulls your eye a little, then it's definitely changing the experience of the game, which was not intended. That wasn't like the plan on paper. It was like, I'm going to insert distractions at X thousand feet. It was like, alien motherships are awesome. They should totally be in the game.
I mean, what happens after that? Because I have never seen farther than the alien mothership. Is there anything that happens after that, or is it a secret?
There's some other stuff. There's another thing out there. But I think there's only one after that. I had a lot of ideas for a sort of a... because there's some people that run like 30,000 meters or whatever.
Yeah, I don't know how that's possible. Like, I think like my best that I've ever done, and this is like in the zone after playing for like an hour and just like... It's like you get to the point where it's like you're just watching The Matrix. You know, you're not even playing the game.
Yeah.
You know, I think I've hit like 12,000 maybe, and that was like the magnum opus of my life.
Yeah. That's 12,000, 15,000 is kind of this, like, it's sort of this the next to top tier of running, I think. That's a really good zend out run, I think. I had sketched a whole bunch of things that would appear just as, if nothing else, as rewards for people that aren't achievements, you know?
Yeah, I definitely think it's cool because, I mean, like, you know, like you were saying before, you're slowly revealing this, like, kind of, like, mysterious story. So, I mean, that is such a good reward to, like, be like, oh, after the mothership, there's, like, a squadron of fighters or, you know, something like that.
Yeah, it's like, I think it would be cooler if, you know, in this kind of game specifically, like, a better reward, I think, is another, you know, you would come across some giant, weird, hard to, like, rather than explaining more of the story and rather than unlocking hats, you know, the adding another thing you don't understand seems like the better reward in that game specifically. I don't know why that is, but...
No, I think it's an awesome design choice, and I wish more people would do things like that because, I mean, that Cannonball just has so much personality. I mean, it's just insane just through a background image, you know, and, like, everyone else, is just, like you were saying, is just squandering it with clouds.
I kind of think, and it's not in every case, you know, but there's certainly, I think... For me personally, I really, really like a space that where I can imagine, you know, kind of what's going on because I don't know. Like, I want it to it's a way to engage players after they've stopped playing your game that's not a bad way. Like, I don't want to engage somebody in my game because they're stressing out over, oh, I need to hop on and play again by 3 p.m. or else I'm going to lose my log chopping points or whatever. Like, I don't want to engage them that way, but if they turn off the game and they're sitting there going, like, what the crap were those things in the background anyway? I don't understand. Why is this – why? How come this guy can jump so high? Like,
yeah.
To me, that's a really cool way to engage somebody when they're not even playing the game anymore.
Do you ever plan on expanding the Cannonball universe, either through other games or similar games that might take place in the same world or anything like that?
There are going to be games... I hope that I always make games that take a similar tack toward quote-unquote storytelling. But what's probably better defined is like theme or scenario or whatever. I like the idea of having like a big... breadcrumbs kind of thing where you don't know for sure what's going on. Like, I only want to tell people enough about what's going on for the game to make sense. Like, mm-hmm. That was the line in Cannonball, was I stopped putting stuff in as soon as you could understand that there's some serious shit going down and you are running really fast. That's like, for me, that's when I can cut it off. Because what can I contribute beyond that that will be better than what they can imagine for themselves.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, I mean, that's a great point.
Actually turns out to be true because, like, I didn't have anything in my, like, Cannonball guy is just basically you know, the result of me really liking the old Prince of Persia games and Flashback and, you know, wanting to make this new kind of game. People started writing fan fiction, and a lot of it was kind of what you would expect, is very kind of rote sci-fi sort of things. But then somebody wrote this really short one that thought was totally, like, it's now my favorite one. It's how I think of Cannibalt Guy now, is he is sort of a superhero, only he didn't know it until the very last moment. Like, he spent his whole life not knowing, like an Unbreakable, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's awesome.
He's just a regular guy, and suddenly there's this crisis that causes him to push himself, and he suddenly realizes he can do these amazing things, and then he dies. End of story.
That's badass.
It's totally awesome, and that's not what was in my head when I made the game. So that's like a cool thing that you can do if you decide not to spell everything out. If you only spell out parts of it, then, you know, people can make it better for you later. Like, yeah, you can sort of live and grow. It's kind of that sounds very hippie, but it's kind of a cool process.
Well, no, I mean, like, the same kind of thing happens with, I feel like happens with movies these days. You know, like, we watch, like, the old black and white sci-fi movies, and, like, the best part was always, like, when they cut away and you had to use your imagination, yeah, instead of now, where it's like, you know, 90 minutes of 3D explosions.
And, yeah, there's a kind of like a Clockwork Orange thing going on lately, I think, where, like, you go see a sci-fi movie and it's like they're, like, prying your eyeballs open and injecting 3D models into your brain directly. And it's not always bad, you know, by any means. And it has its own sort of appeal. But it's, you know, you know, Jaws has no sharks in it for like 85 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's barely any sharks in that movie at all, but it's terrifying. It's so scary.
Yeah.
Another thing I want to ask you while we got you, I mean, it seems like the dudes from Team Meat love stirring up drama in regards to the App Store. And we talked about this on our podcast before. And mm-hmm. the way that I've always kind of seen it is, like, the things that they say are generally pretty accurate, but they say it in, like, such a trollish way that it's, like, you know, so inflammatory for so many. When you were involved with Zits and Giggles, I mean, did you have any idea, you know, what was coming in regards to the drama bomb that was about to go off?
Because it took a long time. You know, that wasn't, like, a big deal for, like, 6 months or 8 months or something. I think it ended up being a really good thing. Like, it was a bit of a fiasco eventually, but it was a fiasco that paid for a bunch of Tommy's, like, diabetes medicine. So, like, all in all, I feel really good about it. But, I mean, that was a trollish game. So there was something that was happening. There was something that happened on the App Store really, really early, which is, you know.
Well, do you want to give the whole background? I mean, you can probably do it much better than I can summarize it.
Yeah, I mean, the idea was, so there was, you know, there was like wave one or wave zero of iPhone apps, and it was like Super Monkey Ball, and there was, you know, like 3D apps from really reputable developers.
Like the first 3D games that, you know, everyone thought was cool.
Yeah, there was a bunch of, and they weren't necessarily great games, but they were, you know, people were putting a lot of work into that stuff. And at some point, you know, after a year or something, there was this, there was a rough phase, I think. And I think it's kind of falling by the wayside. I feel like the bar is going way, way up. But there was a time when you could make a couple million dollars off of fart buttons, you know? Or there was, it was like Mood Ring, where you'd like touch the screen and it would just show colors.
Right.
You know, and you'd make like hundreds of thousands of dollars off of that. So Zits and Giggles was my like idea for kind of trolling the App Store in a way. It was like a, you know, we can make a game about popping zits in a week. And it won't be bad. We didn't make a bad game necessarily. But it's a small game that is targeted at this way lowest common denominator type of thing that was going on at the time. And it was a total failure. Like, we sold like 3 copies or something, and I completely forgot about it. It was just like, well, we tried to crash, like, cash in on the crappiest way we could, and it didn't work out. And honestly, good. Like, if that had worked out, what lesson would I have learned from that? It would have been awful. Yeah. So it just sort of sat there, and it was selling essentially 0 copies a week. So Tommy bumped the price up to like $5 from $1, something like that. And it sold a couple of copies, so he bumped the price up again. And each time somebody bought a copy at the new price, he just kept bumping it up. And eventually it earned like a few thousand dollars, and it helped.
Wow.
It helped fund Super Meat Boy, which is great. And now we're using the money to go to Las Vegas to go to the Evo World Fighting Game Championships and spectate and drink poisonous margaritas. So,
nice.
It really, I don't know. At some point, you know, at one point the game costs like $400.
Anybody buy it?
Yeah, like multiple copies were purchased at that price.
Wow.
Before Apple shut it down. So at some point, like, I think it was almost like a proto Kickstarter thing. Like, you know, like people must have, the people that either bought it just simply did not want their money anymore. Or they were donating that money to us, I think. I can't imagine any other possible scenario right now.
Did you have anyone like contact you that was like, hey, I just bought your game for $400, hope you do something cool?
I don't think so, strangely.
Huh.
I think it was all pretty anonymous.
That's crazy.
I wonder how many people bought it and were like, this looks like just some sort of zit game, but it's got to be something amazing to be this price, and I just have to see what it's about, you know? And then they find out it's actually just a zit poppy game or whatever.
Yeah, but it's like $400, right? So, yeah. Like, what could they have possibly imagined?
I have to spend like 6 months contemplating spending $400 on something.
Yeah, I mean, that's like you set aside money every couple of weeks. You're saving up for a new bike or something. Like,
I
you know, if it was an impulse purchase for someone, you know, this problems. Is not somebody who wants their money anymore.
Yeah.
They're trying.
And it's your job to take it from them.
Yeah, and I don't feel like we squandered it. You know, it was like life-saving medicine and, you know, in funding the development of cool games since then. So
that's pretty cool. So, I mean, what do you guys have next on the horizon now for Semi-Secret Software? And other stuff you might be involved in that might not necessarily be a Semi-Secret Software project.
Sure. So we're, you know, just a week or two, we're releasing a big update to Wordle. And talk about, like, the standards going up over the last year or two on the App Store. It's really, I find it really jarring to play the version of Wordle that's for sale right now, because it's just way out of sync with, like, top-tier apps on the store, period.
Yeah.
It's from a different generation or something.
Well, it's like playing a previous generation console game is what it feels like, you know, like playing like a game on your like Trio 650 or something, which isn't necessarily bad, but it's just, you know,
right. Yeah, it feels off. So the version that's going to go, it's approved for sale. We're just kind of waiting for a launch date. But it feels right. It feels like it belongs on your iPad with the other cool apps that are on there. So we feel really good about that. We've been just like going over it with a fine. It's been done for a month or two, and we've just been nitpicking and taking little bugs out and smoothing out the way the user interface flows. And really, really happy with it. It's got cool iPad play modes. It's got online multiplayer through Game Center. It's got a bunch of cool stuff.
Online multiplayer. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I mean, you want to talk about how the online multiplayer works, or is that a secret for now?
No, it's just normal Game Center stuff. You say, I want to play multiplayer, I want to play online, and you invite friends to play. And it's got pretty seamless dropouts, so if somebody gets a phone call and they leave, the game finishes, it shows the scores of the remaining players, and on they go. If you get a text message, you can jump out, answer it, and jump back into the game. I think it's pretty slick. I don't know.
I wish more developers did things like that, you know, taking into account how you likely use your phone and how that will affect, like, your multiplayer gaming.
Yeah.
Which, you know, totally goes by the wayside. It's like, all right, well, you know, fuck it. If someone quits the game, then, you know, it's their problem.
Yeah. And the thing that we want is, you know, if you're the one who drops out of the game, you know, if you don't answer your text message before the game is over, then, you know, you basically, when you go back, you can finish the game, but you're on your own game now. There's nobody there with you. But, you know, it doesn't crash. It doesn't kick you back to the main menu. If you leave, it doesn't kick everyone that was playing back to the main menu. That was the important thing, because you can just auto invite, you know, strangers to play with you. And we wouldn't want, you know, somebody's going to figure out how to grief players in this game. It always happens, but
yeah.
We try to at least put some effort into stopping the obvious tactics, just so that, I don't know, if there's ever been a device where people just expect stuff to work, it's this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, what else do you guys have coming in regards to, like, new games, new projects, new anything cool?
That's what we have to decide. We've been working on this update all year. So we're going to launch this, and it's kind of like a relaunch because it's supporting iPad for the first time and iPhone 4 for the first time. We've just been doing this the whole time, so we'll put this out, and we've got a cool website and a trailer that'll go up on launch day, and then I guess we have to, like, meet up and have some hamburgers and figure out what to work on for the rest of the year. We have some ideas, but, you know, nothing. We haven't actually started the next thing yet.
Cannonball 2?
Are you going to stick to, like, paid games? Or are you going to try a free to play kind of thing? Or not even sure yet.
We kind of have. We have a sort of a plan for both. But I don't know. Right now we're leaning toward doing another normal paid game. I still feel like there aren't a whole lot of really nicely built on iPhone. I'm not sure there are any really genuinely ethical, quote unquote, freemium games. I think the League of Legends model, is really, really sensible, and really ethical. And, you know, outside of that, I'm not sure. So we have one game idea that's in the ballpark of that. You know, the idea that there's some free content, but a lot of it is you don't get to decide when you have access to it unless you pay for it. I feel really good about that model. But the game that model works really well for is not quite as interesting a game to work on as the other one.
Yeah, definitely.
The other one just makes a lot more sense for a normal paid game. So
yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah.
Good to know.
Maybe a cannibal themed Farmville is in your future.
Yo, that'd be hot. You could grow the aliens.
Either down. That or a modern military first person shooter with a cannibal theme.
Yes.
Or fuck, you could even get on Mirror's Edge 2 for EA.
Yeah.
I'm really excited for that, honestly. I think it's real obvious that Mirror's Edge was rushed out way ahead of its time. And when that game gets a full, if it ever gets the chance to have a full sort of life cycle, you know, a full
gestation. Fully baked.
Yeah, that's going to blow people's minds way more than what they released already, I think.
Well, we got a skedaddle, my man, but do you have any parting thoughts? And also, could you tell our audience where to reach you, like on the internets, your studio and stuff like that?
Oh, sure thing. I don't know if I don't have any parting thoughts in particular. I guess in general, I feel pretty upbeat about how iPhone stuff is working still. You know, we're kind of always when you're a small studio, it really pays to be a little paranoid all the time. Just like when you're a small animal in a big forest, you know, it helps if you have like big ears and big eyes and you're a little bit shaky. Mm-hmm. Just as a basic survival thing. But App Store still feels pretty good. You know, just as a small company, there's still the overhead is so low. The software development is really, really manageable, very much on par with any other console. So still feeling good about it. But our company website is semisecretsoftware.com, which is a pretty long one. And my personal website is just adamatomic.com. And you can find us. Our Twitter accounts and email accounts are all available on both of those websites. I guess that's about it.
Hot, man. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, sure thing. Thank you, guys.
So that was Mr. Saltzman. Guys, what did we learn today? I'm going to go with Jared first here. Jared, what did you learn?
Cannonball is $3 and it makes me want to rage.
Yeah. Eli, what did you learn?
I learned the same lesson. And also, I totally get why Adam is like on the top tier of the whole indie game scene, I guess, because you know he's got his shit together. I mean, like, if this interview wasn't clear enough on that, like, it really is.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely. Dude is on the ball.
Yeah. Cool guy, and he makes good games, and he has really great outlook on what games should be and what gaming should be. And, yeah, it's cool. I wish them nothing but continued success.
You know, I will keep the secret of their racing game control scheme all the way to my grave.
No way. No way. That game prototype he was talking about sounds really interesting, and I hope they kind of go back and do something with it. The kind of real-time editing of the track.
If nothing else, it would be cool if they released it as like, hey, here's a free game with no tracks and a cool track editor, you know, go to town.
Yeah, like whatever you want to do with it, go for it, yeah.
Like the control scheme it uses worked awesome, and I have not seen it in use yet on the App Store.
I joke.
Sometimes just having a unique control mechanic is enough to get things going. I mean, you can spark off a genre.
There you go.
I joked about Mirror's Edge 2, and I know this isn't in the spirit of what this man does and what he knows, but I would love to see him be the lead on a budgeted title like that. Like a big budget.
Oh, totally, yeah. I mean, but you know, why would you want to be in a huge team if you know you're doing what you're doing and exactly. No one's telling you what to do?
But
you know?
I mean, he's such a visionary, and obviously he. I mean, like for a game like Mirror's Edge, which is pretty off kilter with everything else that's in the AAA space, at least. Like I don't know. Like I would just love to see what he could do there. It's just you know, again, like you said. I mean, why pull him out? I mean, this is obviously where he thrives, and where we thrive is in the audio realm, guys. Huh? Huh? I'm segueing out so we can get out of here.
God.
Yeah, you like it. And audience, you like it too. Hey.
One star, terrible segue.
If you want to get in contact with us, of course, podcast@toucharcade.com. And, you know, if you want to get in contact with us elsewhere on the interwebs, toucharcade.com, twitter.com/toucharcade, facebook.com/toucharcade. Those are the places where you can find us on your webs. And, yeah, that'll be it for this bonus episode of the Touch Arcade Show. Expect another one next week. And, of course, this Friday, expect a new episode of our flagship podcast thing on the internet, the number one show ever, the Touch Arcade Show.